For December the 2nd, 2016, we talk about Pokemon Moon, the No Man's Sky patch, and we ask you about your favorite ways to get around in games. Welcome to Level 174. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Mindsmith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Thank you for understanding us being away last week, but it was American Thanksgiving. I feel like we've missed a lot, at least more so than we have in the recent past. I appreciate the understanding. I hope everybody had a very good holiday, if indeed you celebrated them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and if you didn't celebrate the holiday, I hope you just had a good day.
Like, oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, nothing. Well,
I mean, I hope the 24th was just spectacular for you in a way that defies. Yeah.
There's only so much special day energy out there. And so if somebody isn't actively trying to make it a special day, I hope that they like stayed in bed so that could go to people who are actually trying to celebrate and get into the mood, get into the, you know, into the season.
Staying in bed sounds like pretty good day to me.
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't sound too bad.
Yeah, that's a thing. Damn it. I just described my ideal day.
If I could just be in bed and eating fuck tons of food, I would be so happy.
Oh, but yeah. But we've got the usual kind of show for you this time. I imagine we're going to all have a lot of stuff to talk about in the grind, so I don't want to take up too much time with banter. Does anybody have anything especially banter worthy?
I think Thanksgiving was good.
Yeah. Thanksgiving is good. Yeah. So says Dennis.
Excuse me, specifically the Thanksgiving banter.
Yes, I also, there we go.
Thanksgiving was good, but the Thanksgiving banter was,
yes,
was pretty good as well.
Yeah. So we've got the usual kind of show for you, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And why don't we get started with
The brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Ben, you have a story that seems pretty big.
I do.
Yeah, I saw it and forgot about it, so I want you to tell me about it.
Yeah, so I'm not actually talking about... There's a story that was just talking about games in December, and just to mention it, Last Guardian is apparently coming out in a week, so they say. I'll believe it when it happens, but that's not the story I'm going to talk about. They released an update for No Man's Sky, and so there's a six-minute-long video that they also released, kind of going over like what the new update adds to the game. But this is kind of their attempt to mend fences. Is that, that's an expression, right?
Well, I mean, there is the ability to create and mend fences if they break in the game. They built that in. You collect space fence parts from a fallen civilization, and then you
build
assemble
it from carbon.
Them.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and so it's basically a patch for the game. It adds new features. The notable features are you can do base building. You have a freighter, which is kind of weird. You can also automatically mine resources. So they're kind of admitting, like, yeah, the gameplay was kind of boring before, so maybe let's automate that part and then...
Wait, so let's take it out?
Kind of. In the video, they show like there's basically things that you can build to attach to resources and will automatically mine it for you. I'm not sure how it works in terms of like if it gives you a steady stream of resources or if it gives you all the resources of that one thing and then never does anything again. So I'm not sure the logistics of it. And then the other thing that they did is there's new game modes for the game. There's three game modes. There's the normal game, which is the game that they released before. There's a creative game, quote unquote. And I believe that's where you can actually build your bases and do more of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then there's a survival mode where apparently it's just a very difficult game in terms of all the environmental effects.
Is there permadeath in survival mode?
I don't know. So I don't know one way or another. And then I think one thing they mentioned in the video is they created new algorithms for generating the planets.
Yeah,
so apparently
this blows my mind.
Yeah, so they claim that it'll make, you know, prettier planets, but you know, who knows? whatever.
But I feel like this doesn't really impact any of the core problems, which is, you know, this is fundamentally a game without gameplay.
Yeah, but they have a base now, so...
it's, you know, the fun thing in No Man's Sky is seeing what's over the hill, right? And yeah, so except... when you have to mine for resources for, you know, 3 minutes per area to get over the hill, that's really annoying. So I think the idea of, hey, I can see, hey, there's a big cache of resources here, I'll drop a miner on it, and then I get those resources while I explore the next hill, does a lot to improve the loop that I enjoyed about the game.
Yeah.
See, but I feel like when you have an infinite number of hills with no, you know, no purpose or meaning to them, then it doesn't matter what's over the hill, because it's, you know, statistically no different than, you know, what's over an infinite other number of hills. You know, yeah, I mean, without people or plot, it just doesn't matter.
Yeah, so that was... I think the one gripe I had is, like, a lot of the things that they're adding is, like, well, this is stuff that you probably should have figured out before you released the game. But that said, it is also an independent studio, so it's, you know, a small number of people. It's not a triple A game, so it might be a little bit unjust to have that expectations.
See, except that...
They build it as a triple A game?
Well, I think more it's a thing where... I know, but kind of, granted, I've not played it, so I guess, you know, this is outside looking in, but kind of... My complaint with it is it seems like they ignored game design and then were shocked that they made a crappy game. Like, you know, they you know, ignored putting in any sort of, you know, any sort of gameplay, and then were shocked when it wasn't a good game. And it seems to me like it's kind of like hubris type of thing, where it's like...
I mean, think it's kind of like releasing a Fallout game, but with none of the missions, you know, where it's right. Like, it's, you know, it's kind of like an interesting world, interesting atmosphere, and interesting mechanics going on. But,
well, it goes beyond that. Like, it is massive on a scale that isn't even orders of magnitude larger than what's been done before. It's even beyond that. Like,
yeah.
This the true size of this universe is almost kind of hard to comprehend.
Well,
and so as
see,
a,
but
as a
I'd argue the other way around.
Well, as a technological experiment and just like an interesting thing to try, I think this is really, really cool.
So we don't have to relitigate the case against No Man's Sky over again. We've covered that a lot. Like, the thing that is disappointing about this is it's going to be, or not disappointing, but at least of note, it's going to bring a lot of people back to this to see if, you know, if the weight of a release and the weight of that release window and expectation comes away. Like, if people are going to settle into whatever it is that this game company, I forget their name, was it Happy Games or something?
Hello Games.
Hello Games. There we go. If people can settle into what Hello Games actually did develop, regardless of its merits, if they can, you know, take a look at that. And also to see like how far they can cover these wounds with Band-Aids, you know, like, okay, you miss, yeah, like, you know, you're disappointed that there's no multiplayer. Well, there's still no multiplayer, but you can leave Dark Souls messages if you happen to be on the same planet. But again, it's not that this universe is of a particular size. It's that its size is effectively arbitrary, because anywhere you go, it is just generating a new thing.
Yeah.
Hey, you're just.
I still haven't upgraded my warp drive to the state where I can get to like the rare planets. Ben, did you ever go to those and see anything like the variants there? Anything interesting?
By definition, there are no rare planets. If there's an infinite number of planets, then none of them can be rare. They're all equally meaningless and unique.
Yeah.
It's a very nihilistic interpretation. But I don't disagree with it. But to try and walk away from a darker interpretation, I only went on the path towards the center of the galaxy, and then I kind of gave up after I think the ending of the game was spoiled for me. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So I never varied off the beaten path, though.
I think the idea behind the rare planets is that they're more difficult to get to because of the warp drive requirements. Like, they are off of the beaten path, and there's something different about their generation. That is entirely just based on things that I've read and barely understand, mm-hmm. though. So, yeah, I don't know. I was curious when I saw base building, that made me a little bit excited. When I saw like freighter stuff, it got me a little bit excited too. But it's like, to what end? I don't know.
Yeah, we've really buried the lead. The big thing is more inventory slots.
Yeah,
that's the huge thing.
Yes, items are stackable now. So
game of the year.
So stepping back a moment, did they eventually admit that there is no multiplayer?
I don't recall if they straight up did.
I don't know.
Yeah,
they apologized for a lot of things. I don't know specifically that or not.
Yeah,
but to their credit, at least they're trying to mend things, and they're not like, you know, they're releasing this for free. So at least they're not just saying "F you, we're going to move on to the next game" sort of thing. So
yeah,
and I do think it's worth especially considering from what I hear or understand, like this is a pretty sizable update. You know, this isn't just like throwing some DLC at you.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's not just like additional text at the stations and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. Hmm. Well, it might get me to go back in and check it out, but there's just been so much coming out, guys. I have so many games sitting here that I'm excited and really am jazzed to play. So let's see here. Dennis, what you got for us?
Yeah, so Final Fantasy 15 came out this week. And
got my copy right here.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm guessing that's one of the games that you're looking at right now. So praise God, it's actually good according to reviews. So the wait and the hype was not for nothing. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing that's come out is there's apparently a boss battle in the game, and it's end game, so you can only get to it with a post end game save. That is billed as taking 72 hours or 15 hours or some insane amount of time, and those are the two numbers that have been kind of quoted as people have talked about it. Basically, you fight a monster the size of a mountain. It's just, a huge long ass boss battle. it's not really, really 15 or 72 hours or whatever. Some player has already, beaten it in about an hour, but an hour is still a long ass time. And he did some serious min maxing, to get his characters to a place where they were able to max out their damage and take this thing down. So that's super interesting. Other people have kind of tried it and bounced off it. The problem is I watched a little bit of the video of this boss fight, and it doesn't look like anything happens. Like, this thing is so big and so slow that at least in, like, I watched probably 5 minutes of the video. In the 5 minutes that I watched, I didn't really see an attack. It kind of moved every now and again, but no actual, like, I don't know, interaction. You were just like, literally slamming attacks into a meat wall.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's so this isn't a new thing for the series. Obviously, they've always had challenge bosses. Mm-hmm. And I think it's something where after Final Fantasy XI specifically, they started leaning more on like an MMO style design, obviously, because Final Fantasy XI was an MMO. But mm-hmm. 12 had a very a notoriously long boss fight that I don't know if it was billed as taking 72 hours, but just 12 is a game full of these ridiculously absurdly difficult mm-hmm. Boss fights, and it pretty much is, this will take forever unless you know the trick and unless you can understand the systems well enough to kind of like get around this. I don't know how Final Fantasy 15 plays because I've never played a demo and I know nothing about it. But if it's anything like 12, then it's all about like setting up a self-sustaining system and then like watching it as it executes almost.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, this guy who beat it in an hour used level 69 characters.
Nice.
And yeah. And the thought that I had is, oh God, there's going to be a race. It's like the opposite of speedrunning to see who can beat this boss with the lowest level characters. Like, you know, that's gonna, and someone's gonna do like a level one run or whatever. And I guess at first you have to beat the game,
of course,
with them that low, but. Yeah, that is something I would be interested to see. How low can you go? But yeah, so glad that Final Fantasy 15 is out and seemingly good, and that it's got interesting stuff like this in it.
Yeah, I was surprised to see how good the reviews it got were. I think that Final Fantasy is one of those series that a mainline entry of it is going to have a little bit of like inflation on it. Like it's been getting like nines pretty much everywhere, so it's probably more realistic to call it an 8 or a 7.5. I'm bracing myself for that, just because you know how hype is. But
so I want to jump in here. Has it been getting good reviews? Because on Metacritic it has like an 84 out of 100, and on IGN it had like an 82. I have seen lukewarm reviews for it.
No.
See, although I feel like this is a thing where Final Fantasy is so polarizing that I feel like it's almost you either pick the bottom half of the reviews or the top half of the reviews and decide which camp you're in.
Yeah. I just know from the sites that I look at and from talking with people who were looking forward to it and playing it, they seem to be jazzed about it. I don't know, like in aggregate, I if I hear this game got like an 80 or something, like okay, yeah, that is acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Huh. So 72 hours. David, what you got for us?
I got swept by Ben pretty hardcore, and I've been going through Polygon. I'm not sure anything else happened this week.
That's fine.
To be fair, it's been a slow week since Thanksgiving. But
it really has. It really has. So I've got just like a short one here that I'm excited about. Stardew Valley, that farm game. Mm-hmm. More than farming, but that farm game it's been confirmed for consoles. It's coming out to consoles in December, like PS4 on December 13th, along with Xbox One at that same time, and then it's going to be coming to the Switch as well. They dropped the Wii U version for kind of obvious reasons, because they want it to sell anything. I think that is a game that would do very, very well on console. I'm kind of excited. During the Black Friday sales, the Steam links were $20, so I got a separate one to put in my to hook up to my bedroom TV, so I could play Steam games in my bed. This is one of the ones that was kind of at the top billing for, you know, for relaxing nighttime play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is a very relaxing game.
Nice.
Is it one that lends itself to controllers?
Yeah, you can play it on controller. Yeah. It's not like a complex control scheme or anything, so.
Cool. Yeah.
Told you it'd be simple.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, so the question is about in-game transportation, which a lot of games have and we spend a lot of time on. So from the Sparrow in Destiny or the Chocobos in Final Fantasy, what in-game transportation has been the most fun and interesting, and what forms drop the ball?
Yeah, so I'm going to get a story here with Kilo, who says, I would play through Mario 64 just to ride the Koopa shells across lava and sand dunes. But then riding bloopers in Mario Sunshine was awful. You had nowhere cool to go, and if you jumped onto it, onto land, it made a sound worse than a dubstep sample of a howling cat.
Oh, no.
I'm going to see if I can find a sample of that so I can put it in.
Oh, you can. I love it.
Can you give me a rendition of what it sounds like?
Okay, that's all I got.
Okay.
There's, like, no dignified way to do that, but...
Yeah. That reminds me of riding the Koopa shells underwater in Super Mario Galaxy is super fun.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
You just feel so badass when you do it.
Yeah. Let's see. David, what does Brandon say?
Brandon says the gyrocopter from Far Cry 4 is pretty great fun. Not the stealthiest way to make it take over an outpost, but firing a grenade launcher down at your enemies is always fun. Riding the saber-toothed tiger in Far Cry Primal is pretty cool too, I guess. I'm not sure if that's how he meant it to come across or not.
I don't know, just harnessing one of nature's mightiest steeds, a literal apex predator at the top of his game. It's all right, I suppose.
If you're in that,
yeah, 3 out of 5.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed I think my favorite was trying to take pot shots at wolves from the gyrocopter, pretend it was the beginning of the feat of the thing.
So it's a gyrocopter. What makes it not a helicopter? Is it that it's a go-kart but with propellers instead of wheels?
Yeah, I think a gyrocopter doesn't have a rear propeller that keeps it from spinning around. Mm. It just uses some sort of gyroscopic thing.
Mm.
Comes with a free Greek sandwich when you buy it.
Yeah, and a copy of Gyromite for NES. Rob is not included, though.
I actually had that game growing up.
Gyromite?
Yeah.
Did you have a Rob to play it with?
Nope.
Oh, weird. I wonder how that would work.
It didn't work, and it literally was not until like a year or two ago that like I thought back and was like, you know, that game never effing worked, and like looked it up to like figure out what the hell was going on.
I guess you could probably plug in a second NES controller and then like press some of the buttons with your toes, because that's all Rob was doing with that.
Was it okay? Maybe that was it, because like there was like a time when I figured out like I got it to work once, and I must have just happened to like have the second controller in and picked it up instead of the first one.
It's like Psycho Mantis.
Yes. It's like Psycho Mantis, but with robots.
Ben, what does Graham say?
Graham says, nothing gets me into a Grand Theft Auto game like jacking a sweet ride and driving around the streets of San Fierro, Liberty City, or what have you. Hundreds of licensed songs on the radio stations as you learn the geography of the game is great. On a much larger scale, I like it in games like Dragon Quest and Final Fantasy, when you start with no vehicles and have to venture the world map on foot, unable to pass mountains or water. And as the game progresses, you obtain ships and even aircraft, giving a very accomplished feeling of freedom.
Yeah. And almost always accompanied by one of the best songs on the soundtrack of that particular game.
Do, 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 do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that every time I hear the words like Dragon Quest or Dragon Warrior, that song is like just comes into my head and I start twitching.
Yep. Pretty great. Dennis, what does Sam say?
Sam says Roach, Geralt's heart in The Witcher 3.
Horse?
Unlike, what would I say?
You said heart? I mean, a horse will capture all of our hearts.
He is the heart. Yeah, yeah.
He's the heart of the game.
He truly is. Geralt's the heart. Yeah.
Geralt's horse in The Witcher 3. I want to ride a giant heart now.
Yeah. Please do not shove oats into your heart.
Yeah. Unlike the horses in some other open world RPGs, she's smart enough to stick to roads without constant steering. Also, Roach shows up whenever Geralt calls for her, no matter the distance, because convenient gameplay is better than realism when you spend that much time traveling between locations. Amen. And since Witcher 3 is still an Eastern European computer game, Roach frequently bugs out in hilarious ways, such as climbing over tables people are using to eat or spawning on top of roofs.
Yeah, you know, like horses do.
Yeah. I just like the idea of like, you know, you whistle for like and look up and there it is, and the horse is like, you gotta meet me halfway, man.
There's a ladder around the side.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's goats that climb on top of buildings. Yeah.
See, on the kind of spirit of staying along the roads, one of them that's not my favorite, but maybe I appreciate the most is in Shadow of Mordor. If you're in a, like, one of the scenes where it's like, oh, we're going to walk to the mission, but we're also going to have a conversation along the way.
Yeah.
If you, like, walk up to one of the, to the character you're talking to and just, like, let go of the controls, you'll automatically walk beside them.
Hmm. Huh. Yeah, that just seems smart.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. as a little bit like the auto follow in Red Dead Redemption too.
Yeah. Same idea.
Michael writes, Ratchet and Clank's gravity boots allowed you to walk across special walls and ceilings. Later games also allowed flying through the air between these walls. This leads to some wacky spatial arrangements as you traverse the levels. And just to add, just to be a parody of myself, runner-up goes to Warframe for its crazy acrobatic jumps. That's the secret. Super high jumps, like mad ups, much better than flight. City of Heroes taught me that.
Yeah. Damn straight, you stole my line.
I always lobbied for super jump over flight in City of Heroes.
Yeah, I feel like the only point to have flight was just if you're going to like sit in the air and snipe things.
Right, but I don't want to do that. I want to jump from building to building.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, so does this extend to real life? Given the choice of superpowers, would you still take super jump?
I pick invisibility. Yeah. Here's the thing. I think super jump is only functional if you are in the right kind of environment. Like here in Oakley Hyde Park in Cincinnati, that would not do anything at all for me. But it would probably still be more fun. Damn it. Mm. Yeah, it would still be more fun. Yeah, let's take that.
So here's the challenge is you could have teleportation, but you keep whatever momentum you have when you teleport. So if you teleport into the air and start to fall, mm-hmm. you will be falling at the velocity every time you teleport again. You have to get yourself some water to stop.
So you can like teleport upside down so that you go upwards or something like that?
Oh.
Yeah, why not? I'm feeling benevolent.
I feel like, I don't know, as long as we're doing stupid like superpowers, I think if I were a supervillain, I would want my superpower to be able to drink and get someone else drunk. because like if you think about it, like they are wanting to like off some business leader or something. Like all I have to do is wait for him to get on like a flight and then start taking shots for the pilot.
I mean, honestly, you could just start taking shots for him and just drink him to death, right?
Yeah.
I like that you add the requirement that you have to do drinking. It's not just like make someone drunk or control people's blood alcohol level. You still want the physicality of being able to drink yourself in the process.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Well, and it would be more badass that way. Yeah.
Let's see here. David, what does Chase say?
She says the flying mounts in World of Warcraft were a revolution for me as an aspiring archaeologist. A world better than hooking it or catching griffins, presumably with a hook. while I'm tempted to say the Mako is the worst, I don't know what that is.
From Mass Effect 1, the crazy tank that you rode on planets?
Oh yeah, that was pretty awful. I would have to give the award to horses in any Elder Scrolls game. Only slightly faster than the player, they're cumbersome to fight from, steer, and get off on and off of in a hurry.
I do like the way they freak out when a dragon or a giant's nearby.
What is up with like games and invulnerable horses?
I think not a lot of people like seeing bad things happen to horses.
Okay.
Don't play Bloodborne.
Yeah, bad things happen to horses.
That's actually the subtitle of DLC.
Yep. That was the original subtitle. Kind of like how Zero's Last Virtue's Last Reward was originally called Good People Die. they had to turn Bad Things Happen to Horses into the old hunters.
Good horses die.
Oh, man. let's see here. Ben, what does Raghavan say?
Raghavan says, Shadowmare from Skyrim for sheer edgelordness. Everything about the Dark Brotherhood is incredibly cool, from the way you join to the assassinations to the horse. It's a quest reward that's as dark as night, has glowing red eyes, and emerges from a pool of inky black smoke and water. It also has enough HP to tank dragons. Love that pony. That apart, I enjoyed the fluidity of the jetboard and Jak 3. As for as cool as they look, Sparrows on vanilla Destiny were incredibly boring and dull to drive around.
Okay, mm-hmm. So yeah. treat me like I'm an alien. What is the Sparrow in Destiny?
It's in the picture.
Yeah,
for the question.
Okay, that looks like
a hover bike with some like sort of drift mechanics, except the fact that like it just hovers as opposed to like cornering or anything makes the drifting just incredibly boring.
Mm.
Like when it's all drifting around turns, isn't that exciting?
Yeah,
right. and it's not like you can't really have the feel of like swinging the tail out around a turn. It just kind of slides.
Mm.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never figured out how Turbo actually works on Destiny.
It seems designed to feel slow. Like the way it feels, I don't know if it mechanically actually works this way. You press the turbo button, and as long as you hold it down, you know, you keep on turboing, but you get an initial boost of speed, and then it feels like it just gradually asymptotically evens back down to normal speed. To where you're still holding the turbo button, and if you let go of it, you get noticeably slower. So okay, but it doesn't feel like you're going faster.
Well, and there's also a weird thing where it's like there is a like cooldown on the turbo button, mm-hmm. but you can like hit it multiple times. So like it seems like you said, that just adds to the feeling of the fact that like there's initial burst of speed and then you can like keep revving it. But I think it's entirely just the audio, only turbos for the beginning.
Mm.
Yep.
Yeah. That slipped into Destiny talk. And then I ended up not.
Cole spaced out for a while. Cole, safe to come back.
Okay, cool. I'm back. That was rough, you guys. Let's see here. That was Ben. Dennis, what does Jonathan say?
Jonathan says, I'm going to cheat and say all of Far Cry 4 transport methods. Firstly, elephants are awesome. Agree. Also, strapping a block of C4 to any car and sending it hurtling towards the enemy is fun. The nice relaxing hang glider or wingsuit is calming and lets you breathe in the scenery, but the best is the gyrocopter. It makes the world easy to traverse, and raining hell from on high is awesome. Two votes for gyrocopter.
Hmm.
I feel like how is the hang glider and wingsuit calming? Like that is basically an extended instance of like where constantly looking for a good spot to crash land and almost die. But yeah, I mean, more power. I know.
we'll I talk really more love about the hang gliders and wingsuits in a bit.
Yeah,
I do love the drive-by mechanics in Far Cry 4. I thought that was really well implemented.
How you casually pull a submachine gun out while you're on a hang glider and just shoot down some people.
I meant more like in vehicles. You know, just the combination of, you know, the hyper increased auto aim and the fact that your car would automatically keep driving along whatever road you were on while you were shooting at people was kind of well thought out.
Gotcha.
Hmm. Neat. So I'm going to pick up here with Ollie, who took mine, saying Dishonored. Yeah. What's that over there? Blink, blink, drop kill, blink. Just so satisfying. Yeah. Get on that Nightcrawler shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Full stop. David, what does Jason say?
Jason says, I think I have to go with Roach, Geralt's horse from The Witcher 3. I don't know how many horses he has had in the past, but fun tidbit lore about Geralt is he names every horse he's ever had the same thing. Roach is a tusky steed who will remain within earshot and come running at your whistle no matter how far you thought you had left him behind. I also had a fantastic glitch on a bridge, which had him walking on his front hooves, doing what I referred to as horse yoga. Even when, more comically, I was able to defy physics and jump back in the saddle that way.
Nice.
Yep, another vote for Roach, another vote for glitches.
Yeah.
Let's see, Ben, what does Steven say?
Steven says, say what you want about all the rest of the game, but taking off in your ship in No Man's Sky is still satisfying, and at times an awe-inspiring experience.
We, in fact, will say what we want about all the rest of the game.
We just did.
Yeah. Dennis, what does Jeff say?
Well, first off, Jeff, you stole mine. So best is Aggro from Shadow of the Colossus. I think this warhorse travels with a weight that belonged to the mythical land you were journeying through. Aggro became a companion by the end and had done battle with you multiple times. Plus, he had agency. He cared for his own life and would not just drive off a cliff if you steered him there. Worst is Horses in Red Dead Redemption. Maybe this says more about landscape, but I absolutely hated riding in Red Dead Redemption. I thought it was way too slow and way too automatic, especially holding A so you can listen to the dialogue. The game may as well have been saying, listen, I know you don't want to do this, so here's an easy way to zone out and not care while something mildly more interesting happens. I hated it so much I never completed the game because of the travel mechanic. Sorry, Mr. Marsden.
Yeah.
Yeah, Aggro is amazing. It just has the right amount of auto control. To where, you know, you feel like you are really writing something that has agency. I like that. Yeah. I like phrasing of it.
It's kind of funny because you're not controlling the horse. You're controlling Wander on top of the horse.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the way it should feel, right?
Yeah.
As long as the horse isn't an idiot.
I do love in the theme of, you know, sometimes bad things happen to good horses, Red Dead Redemption's like the kind of community accepted way of getting the, what is it, like 2 bear pelts you need for the last hunting achievement is to sacrifice your horse.
I mean, that's just following in the tradition of like Super Mario World, where you have to sacrifice Yoshi to get that one secret exit.
Poor guy.
let's see here. That was that was you, right, Dennis? No, that was... That was Ben.
That was me.
Okay. David says, another thing that I agree with, the best, the grappling hook in pretty much any game it's at. Honorable mention goes to the skates and Jet Grind Radio. The worst is Mass Effect 1's Mako tank. Again, no love for Mako.
I take a little bit of umbrage towards that. I don't mind the Mako tank that much.
They didn't give you anything interesting to do. It's tough to hold that, like, bad against the tank itself.
Yeah, it's not the Mako's fault, it's the game design's fault.
Yeah, and like I'll say, like the first time that you fight one of those gigantic worms, and that, it's pretty great. I don't like doing it as much as they ask you to do it, but it's a nice set piece.
Yeah, totally agreed.
Yep. Let's see, David, what does Jeremy say?
Jeremy says there is web swinging and there is everything else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can't disagree. That's
perfect.
Yeah. I love that in Spider-Man 2, and it's also really cool in Champions Online.
Is that in Champions Online?
Yeah, I think in Champions Online you straight up like have to semi aim it. It's actually really interesting implementation of it.
Huh. I need to see. So there's that grappling hook game that. So it's funny, we did that. We did that episode of Watch Out for Fireballs about the Spider-Man 2 game, and then right around that time, a Kickstarter was launched by the same designer from Spider-Man 2 indie game. I need to check and see if that is still available or if it is on sale, because the Steam Autumn sale is still going on as we're recording this.
It seems like, yeah, like, you know, Spider-Man with less cool swinging animations.
Which is like fine.
I think the backflips and the crazy poses really sell it.
Mm. I saw that as kind of being an extraneous system that was nice, but not necessarily the heart of what I was looking at.
Hmm.
Yeah. But I agree. It is cool, and it's very Spider-Man-y. That he has you doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see, Ben, what does Christopher say?
Chris says Deus Ex, ventilation shafts, no better way to travel.
Bring your inhaler.
Yeah. I think this might be restricted to video game ventilation shafts, not actual ventilation shafts.
Oh, yeah.
It's Deus Ex. The inhaler has been surgically implanted.
Dennis, what does Jaden say?
Jaden says, my personal favorite, the Anaconda from A Light Dangerous, a combat/trade vessel roughly equivalent in size to an aircraft carrier. And he posts a picture which looks badass. I wonder if you're able to actually walk around this thing, or if Elite Dangerous is a game where you can just kind of pilot it.
Yeah. Elite Dangerous is kind of like an X-Wing kind of thing, or like a Wing Commander flight sim kind of deal.
Ah, okay.
So I don't know. I don't know if they have inside ship sections with it. And we've been going for about 20 minutes, so I'm sorry, the three people who are there. But I don't want to have this drag on for too terribly long. Thank you, everybody, for writing in. Let us do ours. I already had mine. That was the Dishonored BAM thing. Mm-hmm. Because that for all the joking we had about that is literally the one superpower that I would like, is the ability to do the teleports and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mine got swooped as well, which is aggro.
Yeah. David, how about you? You have a favorite?
I think I'd have to give it to two. One would be jumping from City of Heroes.
Yep.
And mm-hmm. then I think one that's really, really badass, although entirely worthless in practice, is the Scorpion buggy from Unreal Tournament.
Hmm.
It's basically like a Warthog from Halo, except when you right click, these like sides pop out of the side so that you can clothesline people as you drive past.
You better hurry them.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah. The problem is, like, you never hit anyone, so it's entirely badass in theory, fairly worthless in practice.
More. Well, Ben, how about you?
I got a lot. So I didn't think about Spider-Man, but I think Spider-Man 2, but that's a good one. Halo Warthog's also a good one. Mm-hmm. Batman Arkham Knight, the jumping out of the Batmobile was a really awesome way to get around the city. And I thought, even though a lot of people complained about Batmobile, I thought they did a really good job of being able to traverse that city. Grand Theft Auto 4, introducing taxi cabs where you can pay to get anywhere on the city.
Yeah,
so there's
yeah.
like a cost to fast travel. I thought that was a cool solution. Saints Row the 4, where you were like Neo and you could super jump and fly around the city, made it easy to traverse. So that was good. But the all around best winner, I think, are the Just Cause games, because that's the most fun way to travel around the city, is by parachute, grappling hook, and wingsuit.
Mm, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shout out to Phil, who was below the line but did call that one out. So
yeah,
shares your sentiment.
What did you think of the driving model of Grand Theft Auto 4?
I don't know.
So
I mean,
weird.
I don't see the driving mechanics too different from Grand Theft Auto 5 or Grand Theft Auto 3's. But
oh, yeah. See, a lot of people complain that the cars are real loose and top heavy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they feel especially like boaty.
Yeah, see, but it's like everything's got super saggy suspension.
See, I actually really like that, because I felt like it's the one game where you can't, you know, carjack a, you know, random, you know, junker and have it perform like Gran Turismo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
that gets to the practicality versus fun that was mentioned earlier, where it's like,
yeah.
If I'm in the heat of the moment, well, it, you know, that could be interesting, knowing that you got to keep a practiced eye out. But that assumes that you're going to keep equal parts junkers and, you know, Gran Turismo cars around.
Yeah.
And the game, if I remember correctly, is kind of heavily weighted towards junkers.
Yeah.
I guess the fun was in like adapting to that, and in kind of the chaos of having to do like drive-bys where, you know, I couldn't just do, you know, a 90-degree corner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good.
I remember how stressful it was getting a really nice car in Grand Theft Auto 4. Because it's like you park it in that save zone or whatever. And it's like, well, I'm never going to drive this because I don't want to lose it. Yeah. But
I never
just go pick up. Yeah.
I never trusted those save zones.
Yeah, oh, really?
Yeah. And it's just they either never worked for me, or they burned me once. And then I was like, well, I guess I can't put anything into this anymore.
Yeah.
See, I always wondered if that really worked. Like, if I could just go with a can of spray paint outside my place here and, like, mark out, like, this spot reserved.
I mean, San Francisco, I think that it's kill or be killed when it comes to parking. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so thank you everybody for writing in. Sorry if we didn't get to yours. If you want to participate in these, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and you will see those go up on Tuesday afternoons.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past period of time or so. Does anybody mind if I go first?
Go for it.
Yeah. So I was talking about all those games that I picked up, the Dishonored, the Final Fantasy 15 that just came in today. But because of Thanksgiving travel and because of playing Neverwinter Nights 2 for Watch Out for Fireballs, I've mostly been playing for fun Pokemon Moon.
Ooh.
Oh, all right.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, this is the new Pokemon for 3DS. A lot of people I know in the community are playing it and having a lot of fun with it. This is the first Pokemon game that I've really kind of sunk my teeth into since Silver, really.
Mm-hmm.
Like basically Gen 2. I got Pearl and I kind of bounced off of that. I got Soul Silver. I was like, oh, this is nostalgic. And then I bounced off of that. And then I got Y and didn't play it. But turns out this is kind of what I needed. And so having these two very disparate snapshots and being kind of separated from the overall evolution of the series as it's kind of come together over the past 20 years has made this kind of a nice mix of like this really familiar feeling kind of thing. Like the game fundamentally hasn't changed, but like the presentation and the quality of life stuff is just over the top, working for me in a big bad way. It's kind of hard to even know where to start. I remember back in the day being incredibly excited to play Pokemon Stadium on the N64. Did anybody else play Pokemon Stadium?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like getting that dingus that you plugged into your N64 controller so you could import your dudes and fight with them. Like, I'm going to get to see my team in 3D. Are you kidding me? And so I don't know. Like, I feel ridiculous saying this, but like loading this up and seeing not just like these new Pokemon, which they're fine, but like they scatter in a whole bunch of other ones, seeing them in 3D, I don't know, it's kind of doing it for me, like watching their animation and having the character come through. Like so one of the big things that really bums me out about Pokemon is that the status effects, they're very useful in a fight, but having them stick around after a fight is a bit of a bummer. Well, now in between fights, you can just check like, hey, refresh your Pokemon, and it brings you down into a little you see the Pokemon on the touchscreen, and you have like medicine and brushes and stuff like that, where you can groom your Pokemon and like use medicine to get rid of the stuff, and then like give him pets and raise his affection, and also feed him Poke Beans, and you know, like they will fight better for you if you treat them well like that.
Nice.
There are places around the map that are like photo opportunities. So you can just tap on your Pokedex, which is itself a little Pokemon inside of a Pokedex. It's like an electric Pokemon, and go into like just straight up a little bit like a Pokemon Snap kind of thing. Like you're waiting to get the best shots, and you get a better camera by firing off, you know, by uploading basically to a social media thing, and you get points by likes, you know, as it grades your photograph. All this sounds like incredibly stupid and shallow, but like, I don't know, the charm is such an important part of Pokemon.
I think it understands why people like Pokemon so much.
Yeah, yeah. But even down to like the actual fights, you know, after you fight a Pokemon, it will show you you will have put its type stuff into your Pokedex, so you'll be able to see on all of your moves whether or not it'll be effective, super effective, or not very effective.
That's nice.
So you don't have to A, remember what type that Pokemon is, B, remember what type of move this move is, and keep in your head the chart of how all of those interact, because not all of them are very intuitive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see. Hidden machines are gone. Like, you no longer have to burn a move slot in order to traverse the world, either move boulders, mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. break things apart, or even fly around, stuff like that. Like, you can just, like, you have a little thing that summons Pokemon to come and do these jobs for you. Like, you ride on top of these things. You ride on top of a Tauros to plow through barriers and stuff like that, and you can map them to the D-pad. Nice. So you don't have to go into a menu. Like, none of this stuff sounds like it's an especially revolutionary thing for a game. And yeah, like, all of it has been incremental, but if you haven't touched Pokemon in forever, it is an infinitely smoother experience.
What about for the people who haven't touched Pokemon ever?
I would say it's pretty, it's hard, right? It's really hard for me to think of that person. This is, from what I've read about it, and also from what I've seen in this, and then comparing it to the things I played before, this is a far more directed and guided experience. Like, in previous Pokemon games, you were going from town to town and fighting the gym leaders to get their badges, and then proceeding along. And this, you're actually doing like island trials. So you're like finding the gurus or kahunas or whatever, and they're all affiliated with different elements, like different types of Pokemon. You're going to do that, but like, it's much more JRPG in the presentation. Like, there are NPCs who you meet up with and things are happening. And based on what I understand, like, after you finish all those trials, the game isn't over. It turns into kind of this bigger, more sweeping thing. So I would say, like, if somebody is looking for an introduction to this, it doesn't feel like there's a tremendous weight of understanding that it's, demanding of you, I guess. Mm-hmm. when it comes to actually, like, I mean, like, what the fuck is going on? It's like, oh, there are all these little animals and people make friends with them and fight them and stuff. Okay, cool. But
so,
like,
they're not that good of friends with them,
right? But like, it'll, it puts like little objective markers on your map on the bottom screen, so you go along with it. So, like, it will lead you along and give you just enough freedom to go off and explore and do stuff, while also giving you a really good indication of where you need to go next. It feels much more like a traditional JRPG than previous Pokemon have.
Hmm. Cool.
Yeah. Doesn't use the 3D at all. I was very surprised at that. Which, it's just bizarre for a first person Nintendo game on the 3DS to say, you know what, fuck it. That 3D Switch on your 3DS, the thing that the system is named after, doesn't do anything. Obviously, I wouldn't have played the game in 3D.
But it's like, I wanted to know that I could.
Yeah, well, it's something that I do. It's like, oh, this looks kind of neat. I wonder how this looks in 3D. Oh, nothing. Okay. It's just a bizarre kind of thing. I don't know. Do you guys, how much experience do you have with Pokemon?
Yellow.
Very little.
Yellow, very little.
Silver. I think I played through Silver and Gold and that whole shenanigans.
Yeah. So we all kind of generation one and two, if at all, is the mm-hmm. sense that I get. It's real good. It's got its hooks into me. Oh, the biggest thing of all, you get experience all right away.
What is that?
Okay. So in previous Pokemon games.
Yeah,
in previous Pokemon games, only the Pokemon who participated in a battle actually got experience. So it's ingrained in my head that if I want to maintain a balanced team, by which I mean have a bunch of different types of Pokemon that are all at roughly comparable levels, I need to always put my weakest Pokemon at the front of my party formation or at the top of my list, so that I throw it out and then immediately switch to something that actually has a chance against this other guy. Instead, early on in this, and I guess this has been the case for a little bit, you get an item called the EXP All, which the Pokemon who participate in a fight get a larger share, I think, but then everybody gets the remainder, Like it's split across it.
Oh, nice.
So you're, no matter what, your entire team will level up. So if you're trying to like evolve something, like I wanted to get a Magikarp and turn it into a Gyarados because he is baller AF. But you know, who wants to fight with a Magikarp? I just put him in the last slot, and then as I fought, you know, he just leveled up by the ambience. You know, he just got like secondhand experience, and then boom, Gyarados. Now he can fight. I don't know.
Nice. I don't know how I feel about this system.
But it's hard. Like
we call that Pokemon communism.
But it's like, I don't know. It feels amazing because like what this frees you up to do is, you know, when you know that you're headed to a new place, you're not entirely entrenched with your same team. Like, okay, I'm going to go to a place with a whole bunch of fire type people. So my main guy, I picked Rowlet, the grass type owl Pokemon, because I'm not a monster. And like basically fire is a huge weak point for me. And so like, well, I need to load up on like grass and or on ground and water type kind of guys. My team isn't really, you know, well, no, I can just build out my entire team, keep one strong guy as the starter on this. And then as I'm fighting, by the time I get to the end of this trial, everybody else will be in a position where they can actually, you know, be effective in the mm-hmm. in the fights that I'm going to do.
Gotcha. It's like rider Pokemon.
Yeah, yeah. There's tagalongs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, it's pretty great. Like I don't know. Like a lot of the stuff, I have no idea how much of it is new with this version versus it's been around forever and I'm just out of touch with it. But like the entire experience for me has been very positive.
Well, good.
Yeah. Pokemon Moon.
People like it.
Any other questions about that?
Nah, good stuff.
Cool. Who wants to go next?
I can jump in.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I've got a couple things. I'll start with Overwatch, because we've talked about it on the show before, but I dipped in and tried some of the new game modes that they've added, which one, it's really cool that they're adding really, really different and substantial feeling game modes to the game. And you know, everything they've done so far has been a pretty unqualified win. The two modes that I tried were 1v1 arena, and then 3v3 elimination. And 1v1 is a best, I guess it's technically a best of nine, first to five kills wins. It's on a smaller map. So they built a new map just for these different modes called, was it Watchpoint Echo or something like that. And it's, you spawn in, each is the same character. So you have Genji versus Genji, or, you know, Mei versus Mei. It's kind of this who wore it better situation where you have to kill the other person before they kill you. And, you know, if you kill the other person, that point goes to you. First person to 5 point wins, or 5 points wins. Really fun, really intense. You don't have to, you know, worry about team comp or anything like that, which is good. But it does lead to scenarios where if you're playing as some of the kind of designated tank heroes that are very high HP and low damage, especially if they have healing mechanics built into them, it can get kind of stupid where you're just kind of standing there blasting away at each other and watching a very, very large health bar very, very slowly go down. So it's I had one round where literally we had three tanks queue up in a row, and I jumped onto the all chat and just to this other guy and was like, this is too many tanks. And he's like, yes. So we commiserated. But the other mode, 3v3 elimination, is the one that really wowed me. And it's just what it sounds like. So you spawn in, and you've got a team of three. You cannot change heroes. And in fact, if you die, you stay dead until everyone on one team is dead. So like much, much higher stakes. Go ahead.
Oh, no, it's like a team refresh almost.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's you know, so you get the point if you kill all of the other team and then you all refresh, and it's first to two wins, I think. So a best of three. And that is intense and a lot of fun. And it makes Overwatch slightly more calculated in a way that I really, really like. And you're doing kind of the math in your head of, okay, I went left last time, so I'm going to go right this time. And we had, you know, we had this team comp the first time, so, and we beat them pretty handily. So they're probably going to change heroes to something that's good against the heroes we were playing. So we should probably change to heroes that were good against the heroes that we think they're going to pick. And like that kind of mind game. Or like, you know, we steamrolled them. I feel like we can stick with it and they can throw whatever they want at me. So it's a lot of fun. And the games go much quicker than, you know, your normal mode. Hmm. And the stakes in general feel higher, which, you know, I love feeling like the stakes are high when I'm playing a game, even if it's just competitive and there's a number that's going to go up or down, like that makes it more fun for me. So playing in a mode where, you know, one death and you're out is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So
it also, go ahead.
I have a question. Is this higher or lower stakes than 1v1 Rocket League?
Ooh, higher stakes because I'm actually semi-competent at Overwatch. 1v1 Rocket League, I know what's going to happen. Like, I'm going to look like a fool and lose. Whereas this one, I go in with a good chance.
Gotcha.
But it is very much in comparison to the normal game. This is the Overwatch's version of 1v1 in Rocket League.
Gotcha.
Which is funny. You'd think the 1v1 mode was that, but. it also leads to some really intense situations where, you know, it's down to, you get this notification if your two teammates die, like, you are the last person alive on your team. It's like, okay, no pressure. But, you know, I had one where I was the last person alive on my team, managed to drop in behind someone who was ulting. So if I had come at them from the front, I definitely would have died, but just kind of found a way to confuse them about where I was, sneak in behind them and get the kill. Which is, you feel like a superhero when that works out. I enjoyed that a lot, and Overwatch is continuing to be fun to play.
Hmm.
So that's the new game modes for Overwatch. I think they added some new stuff with like random brawls and what have you. Like there's just an arcade section now, and there's those two game modes plus two others. And I'm not sure what those others are, but the two ones that I talked about were the main focus.
Yeah.
I also started playing Warframe. Which Michael referenced when we were talking about fun modes of transportation. It is like Destiny plus Ninja is the way to think of it. Like you just, everything moves super fast. You've got very powerful melee weapons that are fun to use. And it is, in general, I like the way that it plays a lot more than Destiny. It's from a third person perspective. So that kinetic, I think that really aids the kinetic feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're watching yourself zip around these levels and slide across the floor, or jump off of walls. And that just feels really, really good. It's, to date, at least it's pretty easy. And you know, you're not really going to put yourself in a lot of trouble unless you are really, really stupid. You know, I'm relatively early in the game, so I might those difficulty spikes might be coming. The thing, so you know, I like the way it plays a lot better than Destiny. The thing that was almost paralyzing was learning a whole new interface and set of resources and mission structure and that sort of thing. There's a kind of a limited set of tutorial missions, and then basically dumps you into your ship and is like, have fun. The whole world is at your disposal. And there's like, you know, six different stations within your ship and five different segments of each of the six different stations and literally thousands of different, you know, potential mod effects that you can apply to different weapons and builds. And it's just overwhelming. Like think being dropped into an MMO and all the systems that are going on there. Cause it is like Destiny in that vein where it has a lot of, you know, crafting and guilds and everything, elements of an MMO.
If you put characters from Warframe and characters from Destiny next to each other, I would not be able to tell the difference. The design is so similar as to be legally actionable.
It is a Destiny ass Destiny game down to there is an annoying robot pal.
Oh God,
follows you around. So it's got a lot in common with Destiny there. One thing that it does really well, whereas Destiny and Borderlands kind of have the syndrome where it's like the No Man's Sky and planets that we were talking about earlier. Like there's billions of different combinations and all the weapons are randomly generated, but effectively there's not a ton of variance. Warframe's weapons all feel very, very different and unique. Down to Michael has been kind of acting as my Sherpa for this, and he told me that there is individual Foley work for every single one of the 300 to 400 weapons in the game. Oh, God. Yeah, so wow. Every single one has a you would be able to distinguish all of them by their firing sounds, which is really cool. And I like that level of effort. I would rather have 100 very distinct weapons than 1,000,000 kind of nondescript weapons.
Yeah.
But I think initially I got through the tutorial on my own and hit that wall and immediately turned off the game because I was just like freaked out and I didn't know where to go and everything like that. Stepped back in with Michael and that was a lot of fun having him be like, just go over here and I'll get you into this place and you should really be focusing on this kind of mod for your weapons, and that made it a little more accessible. Again, drawing the parallel to like getting into an MMO and finding someone who knows what they're doing. And I've kind of got my bearings a little bit now, which means I've fought through that interface barrier to kind of retain the gameplay that I really like.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I'm rocking a kick-ass ninja with a bow staff and an assault rifle right now. Feels good.
Yeah.
We'll see where it goes from there.
I'm looking at this. So it's developed by Digital Extremes, which is a company that primarily has done port work in the past, or they've been brought in to do multiplayer development for games that did not necessarily have multiplayer teams. Like they did the BioShock 2 and Homefront multiplayer, along with I think the Darkness 2 multiplayer, or maybe that was a port that they did.
Interesting. Yeah. I don't have experience with any of those. Yeah. They the amount of, it's a free to play game, so I have yet to hit the point where free to play bullshit has gotten super annoying. Mm-hmm. We'll see. But the amount of like content that they push out and updates that they do is apparently pretty regular and pretty high quality.
Hmm.
So they maintain it like an MMO, and it is free to play like an MMO. But it's got super flipping around like a crazy man in it.
And the characters are ships that you're piloting? I don't think I understand.
They're cyber ninjas. I think they're human, but maybe robots.
They are kind in of? Fact not human.
They're not human. They're robots. They're ninja robots. They're badass. Okay, we can all agree on that. There.
Yeah, I want to say there's some sort of like pseudo like poorly defined quote unquote guardians.
Yeah, back to Destiny. It is very down to like there is a threat that is awakening, or you know you're some kind of superhero guardian guy who's been asleep and gets awakened, just like in Destiny. The parallels on story are uncanny, but that's not what you're there for.
Yeah.
Final thing, delivering on my promise to talk about hang gliders and wingsuits, is I dipped into the Steep beta, which is like a massive snowboarding, skiing, hang gliding and wingsuiting game.
So it's Pilot Wings. Pilot Wings Arctic Edition.
Yeah, there you go, absolutely. And I was very impressed by how smoothly you could get from point to point in the game. Not physically riding, but just the interface literally kind of shows you the map of this mountain range, and it's a massive mountain range. And they are very kind right from the start of allowing you to kind of zip from point to point and get to the highlights. The core idea of the game is that this is a full mountain range. You can go anywhere in it and you can kind of discover cool lines or tricks or what have you, and challenge other people to match them, as you explore. So, you know, jump off somewhere from a wingsuit and fly a certain distance or around a certain rock. And then you can just hit a button on your controller and turn that into a challenge for other people to map. Same thing from if you go down a particularly rocky piece of terrain and do a bunch of cool snowboard tricks, you can hit a button and challenge people to, you know, cover the same area and get the same amount of points and tricks. And so there's a lot of developer inserted missions, but I think the vision for this game, once it actually comes out, is that, you know, that you'll be able to kind of just go point to point and have infinite number of challenges or missions available to you. Yeah. Which is cool. The problem is the hang gliding is super duper boring.
Uh-huh.
Like it feels incredibly slow to the point where I was kind of checked out while I was doing it. Like I was supposed to be like maneuvering through this canyon, with my hang glider, which sounds badass. But you kind of like get yourself on the right trajectory, and then you kind of wait for yourself to float slowly forward until you need to adjust it slightly. it was just not very cool.
Are you able to fire a submachine gun when you're hang gliding, or?
No, automatically subpar versus Far Cry 4.
Yep.
You get disqualified immediately if you fire a machine gun. Yeah. It kind of becomes a national incident.
The wingsuiting feels a lot better in that it is hang gliding but sped up significantly. But other than that, like there's not a lot more to it than that. And then the skiing and snowboarding, I didn't get far enough into to really master, so I can't tell if I didn't like the controls for doing tricks or if I just hadn't really gotten the feel for it in the time that I played. But it's like you kind of have to crouch and jump at the right point off the ramp, and then you hit another button to do a trick and spin. And I just repeatedly miss the takeoff point and kind of zip lamely off the edge without really getting any air, which then kind of precludes you from doing any cool tricks. So that part wasn't too cool. It also has Red Bull's fingerprints all over it. Like all the events are Red Bull sponsored, and they make sure that the VO is like, man, these Red Bull guys really have their stuff together. They've got a sweet event and blah blah blah. It's like, okay, fine, we get it.
I don't drink Red Bull. In fact, when somebody opens a Red Bull in the same room as me, I can smell it. There's something just uniquely unpleasant about it. I don't, whatever gets you through the day or helps you, whatever. But I automatically associate Red Bull with the team of attractive women who just pull up to our office complex. I don't know if this has happened to you yet, Dennis. They'll pull up to this gigantic building where all these different places of business are, and they will walk through and they just like bother people asking if they want Red Bull, assuming that because they are attractive women, people will accept a Red Bull from them. It's like, no, thank you. Like, are you sure?
You don't like the Red Bull Fairy?
Wait,
who doesn't like the Red Bull Fairy?
Accept a Red Bull from anyone.
What's that?
I'd accept a Red Bull from anyone.
And that, more power to you. It is just a bizarre thing to be sitting there trying to work on a script, and then somebody comes up and offers you energy drink.
Like, how did you get into the office? Don't you need a badge?
Who buzzed you in? Come on. Yeah.
Guys, we have a Red Bull mole.
We've got a breach, a Red Bull breach.
The parts that I like about it are this kind of, it works really well having this massive, persistent mountain range that just every direction you go, there's interesting stuff to do and try. And so they've done a great job creating... it's easier to build a slope that you start at the top and get to the bottom, and that's got a lot of cool jumps and opportunities in it, a more curated experience. It's much more difficult to build an entire mountain where you could be starting from any point, you could be going to any point, you could get halfway down and decide you want to change not just the direction you're going, but maybe you want to switch from your snowboard to a wingsuit and have that work and feel seamless and be fun. And they've accomplished that. We'll see how they do with some of the other modes of transportation and, keeping it feeling fun.
Yeah.
So yeah, I spent a couple hours with it. I don't know if I'll go back to it, but, it was interesting to try. And, I love me some SSX. So that kind of wet my whistle for whenever they want to put out SSX 2, I'll be first in line.
Mm. And this is steep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not a game about making tea.
That's a VR game in development. They'll have to change their name.
Huh. Yeah. Cool. So let's see. Ben, how about you? What you been up to?
All right. So have I talked about Darkest Dungeon?
No. Uh-huh. No, you have not. I'm curious to hear what you have to say about Darkest Dungeon.
I got Darkest Dungeon, started playing that. I was inspired by Jeremy Greer, good guy Jeremy, who went over Duckstream. He was streaming that in the wee hours of the morning.
It's a Wii game?
And that was
it was a dumb joke. I'm sorry. I'm the worst.
But that was the first time I'd ever seen that game
Jeremy
be played.
No, Jeremy's the worst.
No, Brian's the worst. Keep up. You have to keep up with who's the worst. Sorry, Ben, continue. I'm not doing you any favors.
You're good. But I think you had talked about this game before. Mm-hmm. Has anyone else played it on the podcast?
I've played it, but not enough to talk about it.
Okay. I guess I hadn't seen it before watching Jeremy play it on Duckstream, but I thought it looked cool, the dungeon crawling aspect of it. So I picked it up, played it. I really like it. I think it's cool. It's a very difficult game, so there's definitely a lot of brutal elements to it where people that you've invested like tens of hours in will die easily, and then it's very sad. But I like it. I think it's a cool game. I like the challenge to it. I don't know if I'll play it for a long, long, long amount of time. Like, I've just gotten my people up to like level 3. That's not like a high level at all, but I've already sunk like 22 hours into like grinding to get to that point.
Oh, wow.
So I don't. Wow. Yeah. So I don't. Yeah. Maybe I'm really bad at the game. I don't know.
Do you mean grinding but in the traditional sense, or do you mean grinding just like playing the game?
Just playing the game, but like, I mean, it's tough, man. You gotta try and get through dungeons without your people going crazy, and that's hard to do. So for those of you who haven't played it, the basic gist is there's kind of like a two parts of the game. There's the dungeon crawling aspect where you send your villagers into a dungeon. It's pretty difficult. It's definitely kind of like 50-50 whether or not your people are going to live or die, like when you send them into the dungeon, depending upon how your levels stack up against the level of the quest that you're playing. So it's a very difficult setting. They even have like longer campaigns where you can have like campfires to try and revive people, but even then it's very difficult to make it to the end and complete the mission. And if you leave before completing the mission, like all your people are just naturally scarred. It just like punishes you for not completing the objective. So it's a very slow progress in terms of like getting the experience up on your people and then making sure that they remain like sane, I guess. So the one part is the dungeon crawl. And then the second part is after you do the dungeon crawl, you get a series of rewards and then you use that to invest in this town that you have. So the premise of the game is your grandfather left you this like town after he did something that's bad, but you don't really know what yet. So it's kind of like Stardew Valley, but not really. You have different buildings in the town that will either like help heal your people or get new people or things like that, or improve your weapons and stuff. And so you can upgrade all of these buildings individually. It feels very similar to like Bastion, the way the town mechanic works. And you're basically just ping ponging back between those two things. Like, so you'll spend around upgrading your town and basically spending all your resources, and then you spend around doing the dungeon crawl and trying to accumulate more resources. I do think it's really fun. I don't know if I'll be able to invest the time into like beating it 100%, just because it seems like it's a very long crawl.
How do you like the combat? I mean, just that combination of like turn-based plus also managing the order of like where it's at. Like, that is super engaging, but I associate that kind of thing more with Dennis than with you. Not that you can't enjoy it. You're free. Although for confusion's sake, it's better if you don't. But like, how do you like it?
Yeah. I do like the turn-based stuff. The order makes it interesting. So you basically have like your mages are in the back and your swords people are in the front, is like a simplified way to put it. Where all of your attacks are kind of sensitive to, you can only use this attack and if you're in certain positions of your four people, and it will only be able to attack other certain people and of the four people that you're going to be fighting against. One interesting thing is things go downhill really quickly if you have somebody die, because everybody gets shifted kind of out of order. And so you go from having four people to having three people, which is already a disadvantage, but now your three people are even less effective than they were before. And so it definitely pays to stay a man or more ahead of the other people if it's a tough fight. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, at least when I was playing it, it seemed like a big part of the strategy was kind of building your party around that. Because like there's it's like the treasure hunter class basically specializes in being effective in any position.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I think is it like the bounty hunter position?
Is it like grave robber or something like that?
There's definitely a grave robber.
I think it's grave robber.
Okay.
A whole bunch of moves that switch them to a different position, and then consequently have a move that works in almost every position.
Yeah, and some people will have moves that will help them get to the position that they need to be in. So, like, I think one of the knights maybe has, like, a lance thrust or something, but it'll move them two positions ahead if for some reason they're not at the very front of your party. So there's certain people who can kind of get to the position that they need to be. The way that I've been handling it is I basically will have, like, two teams, like a team that is being healed in the village and a team that's doing the dungeon, and they just kind of ping pong out with one another. I try to develop those like that.
That was actually one of my favorite parts of the game was, at least for me, I had a lot of trouble, keeping traditional, like, solid team makeups together. So a lot of my gameplay had been like trying to figure out creative ways to cobble together viable teams. So particularly with, like, for example, the occultist, which is like nominally a healer, but he's healing via like dark powers. And so he's also sort of this like weird like debuffer type thing. You know, some of those sorts of things. Have you gotten into that at all, or what's kind of been your experience?
I've tried to use everybody, but mostly it's just trying to put people in the positions that they're best at. So I think does the occultist guy have the like Cthulhu like attack that attacks the back two people?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I do. I like him, and I like the fact that his healing is like 0 to 12, which is a huge range for the game, and that it also might possibly bleed the person who it heals.
Right.
So that's a very volatile like healing mechanic, but it's kind of interesting. It seems like you definitely need at least a healer on your team, though. It's really hard to go through a round without a healer, I think.
I want to say, like, I think you can, you know, I've done like rounds before where I just had like massive DPS and I could just like take advantage of, being able to end fights quickly and also the sanity bonuses from doing so, but it's not recommended.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's definitely a cool game. The mechanics seem pretty sound, though, in terms of, like, the fighting mechanics. There's not, like, an easy way to, like, break the game at all, and but it's not, like, completely unfair or anything.
The expansion comes out soon.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's I guess like vampires.
Okay. Yeah, and one thing with the game too is like the boss battles are really tough because, you know, for one, they're always like at the end of a dungeon crawl, so your people are like in a weakened state by the time you get there. But then on top of that, like the boss mechanic will usually have like some sort of weird rule that you have to figure out in order to beat them. And a lot of times it can be like really difficult. Like there's one where it'll spawn like three skeletons in front of him so that he's like immediately out of range for like 75% of your people. And then so the trick is you have to kill two of the skeletons so that he's in range for most of the people, and then specifically kill him, because if you kill all three of the skeletons, he'll just spawn more. But then
and there's even nothing that you could do to discern that other than accidentally killing all three and spawning more.
Pretty much, yeah. And then even on top of that, sometimes he'll just spawn more people, even if you have like one or you know. So it's just tough. But yeah, some of them are brutal. I've only done right now. I've only been doing the level 1 quests. I did one level 3 quest with level 3 people, and like I think two or three of my people got killed, and it was like a toast. And it was like so much progress, like lost just because of that one mission. So it's like very disheartening. So I'm going back and trying to level up the other people that I have. I have a party size of 12 right now. So it's just kind of a slow grind to try and level them up. But then if some people get too many like ailments on them, I'll just dismiss them because it's not worth it to try and heal them and like spend that much money to fix them if they're only like at a level one or a level two. So yeah, pretty brutal game.
So you haven't tried adventuring in the Darkest Dungeon yet?
No, I haven't.
Just as a side, there's actually a trophy for, I guess to say the final level is called the Darkest Dungeon.
Yeah.
And unlike all the others that you have to unlock, it's open from the very start. And there's actually an achievement for sending an entire party of level ones into the dungeon.
What's it called?
Lamps of the Slaughter. I'd have to... Yeah. Something like that.
So how deeply was Darkest Dungeon on sale over the Black Friday weekend?
I don't know because I picked it up 2 weeks before that. Yeah. But I'm pretty sure it was on. Yeah.
You're talking me dangerously close to just buying it at full price now and feeling like an idiot for not buying it over the weekend.
It's a Dennis ass game. Like
it sounds like it.
Brutal and unforgiving. You'd love it, Dennis.
It's a very real problem that I started an XCOM Iron Man run and then I just took too long of a break because I got distracted by other games that I'm afraid to go back to it because I'm out of my groove. Like I need a warm up XCOM. So.
Fair. I mean it's definitely fun. I've already sunk I think 22 hours into it, so I definitely think it's worth full price even if you pay that much. So yeah,
nice, cool. I got it on PlayStation Vita, and the disappointing thing is the interface is incredibly small.
Mm-hmm.
Like it feels like there is very little work done to making the text legible, or you know, appear legible or not very cramped on it. So it's like, this is a perfect game to play portably. However, I don't know. It is not a very satisfying experience because of that. It's kind of a Salt and Sanctuary problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is that all, Ben?
Yeah. I mean, I got Rocket League, but that's not much to talk about. I have a huge backlog because of the Steam sale. So I'm looking down at about 12 games that I have to play. Not all of this was from Steam sale, but just games that I need to finish. But yeah, so hopefully I'll be talking about that in the near future. One thing I did dip my toe into a little bit like 2 weeks ago is there's a game called The Bridge. It's like a puzzle game in the style of like MC Escher and Isaac Newton, if that somehow makes coherent sense. But I've played like 45 minutes of it, so not enough to talk about it. But
yeah. All right. Nice. Yeah, I'll be curious to hear what you think of that. I've been aware of it, that it is kind of one of those ones that always pops up like, we recommend this for you, but I've never taken the dive.
Gotcha. Yeah.
David, round us out.
Sure. So I've honestly not been playing all that much. I've been kind of busy with the holidays and stuff, but I got into reinstalled Hero Siege in order to do some co-op, and that kind of fell through, but then I managed to get myself addicted to it and kind of did a deep dive into it. So I actually beat the game with one of the characters. It's really interesting. I don't know if any of you have much exposure to it, but it's really kind of cool because when I first bought it, which would have been, I don't know, 6 months to a year ago, it was kind of this fairly gimmicky, like, arena horde mode game. And just, you know, very basic, you know, kind of, you know, obviously an indie game. And they've just been constantly upgrading it to now it's a like six act, you know, campaign with, you know, it's still, you know, combat takes place into an arena, but there's now these like side challenge dungeons you can activate that, you know, have basic switch puzzles and traps and things. And one of the later levels takes place underwater, so you have to constantly be collecting air bubbles to keep from suffocating. And it's just really neat to see a team that kind of really, really put in the effort to make good on a premise and to just fully realize their idea. It's sort of the comparison it seems like a lot of people give it to is Binding of Isaac, in that it's it's somewhat roguelike, and it really emphasizes, you know, finding all these weird artifacts that change the way your character behaves. And so you can get, you know, lots of things that are like, you know, orbit around you and damage enemies, or, you know, automatically shoot at enemies, things like that. It's, I don't know, it's a lot of fun. It does seem like some of those relics can be very, very overpowered. I got to a point in the game where I had enough just ambient damage things that I could fight by simply walking into enemies. Similarly, kiting is very, very effective. So playing a range class is a lot easier. But I feel like it's one of those games that, like, even when you are completely overpowered, it's just fun to run around and nuke things and, you know, just all of the chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Go on.
The screenshots make it look really crunchy from a stats perspective. Like, is this the kind of game where you're picking up and, like, here's a new thing that gives you an extra 0.3% on a damage of, you know, of this particular kind of attack, or is it kind of more macro than that?
It very much is, you know, a lot of stats, a lot of picking up equipment. You know, you can level up your character and that's persistent, and you can find equipment and that's persistent. Any of the artifacts go away when you die, and also you can buy or find potions that give you effects that only stat increases that only exist until you die.
Okay.
But the thing I would say is not everything is this way, but a number of them can be pretty dramatic. So I think one skill point per level. I beat the game at level say like 70. And the max level is 150, and I've currently from like say level 50 onward, I had like plus items that together gave me like plus 25 to all skills. So that's probably like a 50% damage increase. So you can get some, you know, it's one of those things where you can get ahead of steam and really get overpowered very quickly, which I feel like on the whole is kind of fun.
Yeah.
So, overall, like I'd say it's a game that, you know, you can still tell it's kind of an indie game. You know, it's probably a little easier than it should be, you know, some things like that. But I think it's a game that really, really, you know, shows some dedication. I'm hoping the team maybe will go on and actually make like a full featured like ARPG or something after this, because I feel like they sort of started with a basic horde mode and have kind of built it up into effectively being that. And mm-hmm. I feel like making a full featured one could be a really, you know, could come out really cool.
Yeah. No, it's cool that even in that short of a period of time, you've seen this game grow into something kind of fundamentally different than what they set out to make, in a good way, like not in
right,
a compromised
exactly.
way.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Hmm. Other than that,
and that was Hero Siege on Steam.
Yes. I got back into Sunless Sea. I think just a couple of months ago now, they released their their Unterzee expansion, where you can get a submarine and, you know, explore the depths of the undersea. And I actually haven't gotten a sub yet. That's a little later on in the game. But when I first played it, it was fairly early in early access, and a lot of the game mechanics just kind of didn't work together. It really emphasizes resource management, mm-hmm. but they hadn't put in enough opportunities to get resources. So it really plays a lot better now. Seems a lot more even keeled. It's still the, same, just over the top, setting. I just, docked in the Iron Republic, which is kind of, this city that's, sort of sponsored by Hell. And, it's the city of, like, anarchists that will be free from all laws, even the laws of nature. I'm basically, the way I'm making money right now is compiling port reports for the London Navy. And when I compiled it for the Iron Republic, the third paragraph grew eyes, and the periods will bite you if you get your hand too close.
That's great.
So it's kind of that sort of game where it's just completely over the top. So I may or may not have come to the intention of the three unknown gods of the sea, who are Salt, Stone, and Storm. I'm trying to think if I've got any others. It's one of those things where you just very quickly, pull up and, end up with a ton of just over the top, kind of schemes and plots and adventures you're in the middle of.
Yeah.
So.
Huh. So that's kind of another game that's changed a lot. Like, are these free expansions that they're putting out, or is it, DLC packs that you have to kind of snap onto it?
Sure. From what I've been able to tell, I actually tried to buy the expansion for the Steam sale and found that I already owned it. And I'm fairly certain I never bought it.
Did you back on Kickstarter or...?
No, but I bought during early access, and I would say it would be very much within, like, kind of their MO to, I'm assuming they gave it to everyone that bought the game before a certain point, because, like, the company, in the past has, like, really gone out of their way to, when they add particularly, like, new funding models and stuff like that, to make sure that it's fair to people that have already been kind of in the fray. So I'm assuming that's what happened, but I'm not sure.
Hmm. Well, I mean, regardless, end result is the same, and that's a cool thing for them to do, especially for people who bought in early access. I wonder if I have access to it, because I bought that in early access as well.
Okay, yeah, probably do. So, other than that, I think where was I in... Dishonored last time. I just started the mission to capture Sokolov.
I can't remember when that is.
You were enjoying it.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. You were having fun. You had problems with dogs, but that was about it. Like playing it on PC was what was something that turned it around for you.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think the one big thing I actually then I actually completed the first mission and then actually went on and completed the second one, which is, the kind of the rescue mission. And I feel like some of my complaints with some of the tone, I feel like on the one hand, I've realized that some of that was because for all of the non-main character NPCs, they just have generic, heart secrets when you use them. And so if you keep cycling through a character, they'll just give a whole bunch of contradictory messages that are kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that like was kind of part of what was throwing off the tone for me. It also seems like I don't know if this is just kind of the game sort of hitting its stride, or if it's a function of me doing a low chaos approach so far.
Yeah.
But it seems like, you know, one of my big complaints was that, you know, all of the characters just seemed universally like awful people, and, you know, were all just like suicidally depressive and just, you know, kind of seemed to a degree that was kind of excessive. And it seems like, I feel like they take the kind of tone and story to a more healthy place, at least after the first mission, in that, you know, a lot of the, you know, the characters, you know, are at least somewhat hopeful, you know, at least, you know, seem to have some good qualities. At the same time, I like the fact that they offset that by, you know, having, you know, kind of some dark sides to many of the characters. So yeah, I feel like it's a much better balance of, you know, whereas before it was just, you know, kind of, you know, just grimdark all the time. Now it seems a lot more balanced. So.
Yeah. I mean, just as, you know, if it definitely does feel like they get more comfortable as they hit their stride with it, and as you start scanning more relevant people, you know, like as you're building your base, it's a lot of fun to scan your allies and stuff. Yeah.
It does still, like I said, it does still seem a little weird to me, like just some of the, you know, lack of dialogue on your part, and you know some of those things still seem a little off. But actually, my understanding is that that's that in particular is something they kind of rectified for Dishonored 2. So it seems like maybe that's something they realized. But I'm enjoying kind of getting more of a feel for some of the world elements. You know, some of the different religious elements and, you know, things like that are kind of cool. So.
Yeah. Ben, Dennis, does any of this make you guys want to reconsider your stance?
Nope, solidarity.
Okay,
yeah, cool. I'm good.
Because you're technically outnumbered now, probably. Unless David takes a hard turn on it, in which case...
That's okay. We're right.
So, do you know... Wait, when did Dishonored come out... do you know in relation to say like Deus Ex and some of the Arkham games and things like that?
Arkham, the first one was in 2009, second one was in 2011. Deus Ex was summer of 2011, and Dishonored was what am I thinking of here? It was winter, like November of 2012. So this was about a year after Deus Ex.
Okay, because I was going to say, from a gameplay perspective, it feels to me like, to a certain degree, it comes across as, you know, sometimes you'll see games where, like, you know, a certain idea will, will kind of become popular, and you'll see, you know, the games that came out, like, right around that time or right before, sometimes, you know, they kind of feel like they missed the boat because... You know, every game after this other game will, you know, adopt some of its features that worked really well. And in particular, in this one, it seems like, you know, just the fact that, for example, anything except for strictly sneaking up behind a person, any of the other methods of assassination can't be done non-lethally. So there's like no... non-lethal drop assassination, stuff like that, which is something that, you know, was kind of added with Deus Ex and some of the Arkham games. And similarly, the fact that there's, you know, only a single animation and it's incredibly boring. So I'll be interested to see. I feel like some of the problems with the gameplay, I feel like I'm maybe just an unfortunate event of, you know, it being in development at the time when people really kind of figured out how to do that sort of gameplay, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I don't know. I haven't played it yet, so I can't assure you one way or the other.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Cool. Well, I mean, that sounds like an episode to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you guys want to button it up?
Let's button it up.
All right. The credit. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this. There was something that I realized when we were talking about this. It was very close to the beginning of the episode. This is going to come out in, it's going to be the first episode in December. You know what that means? Do you know what that means?
What does that mean?
It is time for favorite titles season.
Oh, shit.
Ding, 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 ding. Yeah. So I need to go back and find out where the previous cutoff was. Yeah, like 2016 is almost over.
Toadie time.
Yep. So Toadie's 2016. By the time this comes out, I will hopefully have a way to for people to place their votes. Dennis, we can talk offline if you have any stances on how we should do the vote this time. If it's just a straight up pick your favorite, or if we want to do any of the other methods that you have done where people can pick and rank and stuff like that. But
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have a feeling SurveyMonkey will be involved.
Either that or Typeform. I like Typeform, man.
I haven't tried it, so
yeah. But yeah, let's talk about that. Watch for an announcement around those. This is something really fun. It's a competition that doesn't matter, but it's just a way to look back at all the dumb stuff we said over the year. all the dumb stuff we said. Didn't realize it was dumb, and said, "Hey, people should look at this."
it's our cream of the dumb.
So. and to see that, you can do the usual stuff. You can like us on Facebook. I don't know what liking or rating or reviewing us on iTunes will do for that, but it couldn't hurt to try, could it?
Mm-hmm.
And then Patreon, that's another thing. As we're recording today, was the second episode of Radio Free Midworld came out. That's my new project, the podcast about the Dark Tower series. People are picking that up and reading along and having fun with it. So go to radiofreemidworld.com if you want to hear us talk through those books and make jokes about measuring time by the number of poops that happen. a thing that happens in the first book. Yep.
Yeah.
am I missing anything, guys?
I think we're good.
All right. So I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
I've been David Mysmith at Mysmith777 on Twitter.
I've been Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
And stick around for some titles. So this title will not be included on the Toadie, just because we will have announced it. I don't want to have people vote. I don't want to call people to vote in the same episode where there is also a title, I guess, because there's a tyranny of the recent in these things.
Dirty pool. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Dirty pool. It's not something I don't want to pollute anything. So this will mark the beginning of the next round of titles. I need to find out where the previous cutoff was, but who has some good ones?
I got a few.
Okay.
All right. I got An Infinite Number of Hills. I have level 69 characters. I have Dubstep Sample of a Howling Cat.
Mm-hmm.
I have Bad Things Happen to Horses. And I have Cream of the Dumb.
Okay. What was the cat one again?
Dubstep Sample of a Howling Cat.
Okay.
That's a kilo Pascal joint.
Okay. Dennis, what you got?
Yeah, so I've got Good Horses Die or Bad Things Happen to Horses.
Okay.
So Bad Things Happen to Horses sounds like the way to capture that. This one I think went underappreciated Spider-Man-y.
What?
See, you had said something was very Spider-Man-y, but then I just got in my mind like Spider-Man-y, like Manny is someone's name.
Spider-Manuel.
Yeah, exactly. So just wanted to capture it.
No, no.
And then Pokemon Communism.
Okay.
Which I feel like, did we have a Pokemon reference in a recent title?
I think so. No. And also you missed the boat Pokemonianism.
Oh, had to do it in the episode, can't edit it out.
Yep. No, we're looking back right now. David, what you got?
I did not have anything.
I also had Good Horses Die, but I also had Space Fence Parts. So let's put it down here. I think both Good Horses Die and Bad Things Happen to Horses have merits. Does anybody have a strong feeling one way or the other?
I think Bad Things Happen to Horses is a little more evocative than Good Horses Die.
Yeah, I agree.
Horses is the last word, so it's more of a twist. Yeah, whatever.
What's that?
Oh, like, you know, like the punchline should be like the last word of something, you know? Okay. So like Bad Things Happen to Horses. It's very unexpected of it being horses at the end. So.
Yeah.
Well, and Good Horses Die, you know exactly what you're getting, whereas Bad Things Happen to Horses, you know, there's a world of possibility there.
Yeah. Okay. There we go. You have swayed me. You have swayed me for my indifference. David, are you on board?
Yep, I'm on board.
All right.